Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, silliness, not silliness. Really makes you sort of sad for the state of humanity currently.
Sometimes.
Yeah. At facebook.com/ballisticradio. Coasting with me, Matt the Minion. Mr. Minion, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, John?
Not too bad. So we've got a... Wait, I'm still trying not to say the word interesting on air, right?
Yeah, yeah. Too soon for it to make a comeback.
Oh, man. We've got an amazing, awesome... Awesome? I said that twice.
Oh, well. You said amazing, awesome.
Yeah, I know, but then I said awesome again, so that was twice. Show with Dr. William April, who has his own fangirls, whether or not he knows about it, and I believe one of them is currently listening. So I won't call her out or anything like that, Melanie, because that would be sad. just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s, ARs, and scatterguns since 1977. A legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. So, trying to think if there's anything else I should mention before we get William April on the air. Taught a class down in Vidalia, I believe, Georgia, on Tuesday. He had six really amazing students that worked really hard all day. I was really proud of them. At the end of the day, they did everything I asked them to do, which is more than most people do. So, hey, good on you guys. So, it was cool to see people, though, start off at one level and work really hard and, like, see a progression towards the end of the day. And it was actually one of the more fulfilling days I've had as a firearms person recently. So, there you go. Just wanted to give a shout-out to them. I'm sure there's other things we could talk about, but, you know, honestly, William April's more interesting than I am, so let's get him on the air. Joining us, William April. How you doing, William?
I'm fine, John. How are you?
Not too bad. So I could give, like, a big, long introduction, but I know how much you like those, so hey, here you are.
Here I am. And by the way, you said interesting just a minute ago.
Darn. It's it's like, I need to get one of those really big, like, industrial-strength rubber bands, stick it around my wrist, and then smack myself with it every time I do that. Or maybe, you know what would be better is if I did that to the Minion and just smacked him every time I said interesting.
Or give him a taser and let him shoot you every time you use the word.
No.
I like that idea better.
I bet you do. I don't know. I sign your paychecks, though, so.
That is true.
Anyway, for those that have not heard you on the show previously, William, can you just go over your experience real quick and then we'll hop right into tonight's discussion?
Well, sure. Right now, I'm kind of a joint animal split between two worlds. I have a private practice in mental health in New Orleans, Louisiana. I've been doing that for about 20 years. And I spend the other half time traveling around the country training and teaching, mostly on the subject of developing defensive mindset and understanding how criminals' minds work.
Excellent. So, and you're actually one of the more popular guests we have, so... I'm sure that it's funny every time I have you on, I can just watch my numbers go up. So I'm like, hey, he said yes again. Awesome.
Well, my mom is appreciative.
Well, there you go. So so many mom jokes to make right now, and that just would be wrong. So anyway, the reason why I wanted to have you on is I've recently posted a video of a pretty violent in its intensity attack that occurred in China about a week or two ago against a two-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, if you haven't seen the video, this is easily searchable online. It was funny to me, though. I posted that video just to show people, it's like, hey, you know, your idea of what a violent attack looks like or who gets attacked is maybe not always accurate, so you might want to be aware of this. And the backlash that I got from people anywhere saying the video was fake to, you know, that doesn't ever happen, even though we just showed a video of it, was just amazing to me. So what are your thoughts, I guess, on that
Well, I did see the video, and it's tremendously disturbing. The first thought that I had is one is it seems either the intensity seems either to argue for real mental illness or something intensely personal to the attacker. I mean, that was a legitimate murder attempt.
Right.
The phrase aggravated assault gets thrown around all the time, but what I always like to say about aggravated assault is if I assault you with that level of intensity, it's not my fault you didn't die.
Yeah.
When you're stomping repeatedly on the head of a three-year-old, I think the child was two or three, on the sidewalk as a grown adult, you are trying to kill the child. If you don't succeed, well, that's just chance. So there's a truly kind of unhinged or focused nature to it that argues either for mental illness or for something just incredibly personal about the very existence of that child.
Right.
There's a lot of people going back and forth on the internet about bystander inaction, but we get very quickly into kind of a cultural difference argument, and I don't know what the dynamics of bystanders are in China.
Yeah.
But here in the States where it's been researched, pretty well using American citizens as the subjects, there tends to be this thing called diffusion of responsibility, where the more people that see something, the less likely it is that any single individual is to do anything about it, because we tend to assume, well, of all these people, someone must have called 911.
And that's the classic example that is Kitty Genovese, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure. There's been some argument about that case back and forth, but it does seem that many people were aware that something terrible was going on, and very, very few of them did anything about it.
So as far as... Now, you mentioned diffusion of responsibility, but the other thing that occurred to me, at least when I was watching it, because even when I watched it, I caught myself creating a reality around that video that was not the actual reality of it, just because, I was not expecting to see that. Is some of it just inability to process the information that's being fed them?
Well, the amount of information that we're getting all day long, I mean, sensory information, digital information, just everything, has got to be in the terabytes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no processing that. I mean, that's a building full of dictionaries of data.
Right.
Every day, and the vast majority of it gets ignored. Because we simply cannot function with that much information.
Right.
A tiny sliver is unconsciously processed, and then an even tinier sliver is consciously processed. But I think for most folks, the prevailing problem is what we call the normalcy bias. We expect most things to be normal on most days because they are.
Okay.
And there is a moment of just sort of when seeing a video like that, input like that, where there's just a moment of head-shaking disbelief where that thought just doesn't fit in your head.
Right.
It's just, the word gets thrown around, but it's literally inconceivable.
Well, the part that really surprised me, because, I study these things on a pretty regular basis. We've got about 25 seconds left in this segment. But I found myself watching the video, even though I had read the headline, Child Attacked, and I'm like, wow, that's a really small little old lady. That's what, you know what I mean? I had made it somewhat more manageable in my head for some reason.
And that's the application of what we can talk about as a schema.
Yeah, yeah. We got to go to break. When we get back, more with Dr. William April. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by the Polypalooza 3 Memorial Training Conference. Join some of the top trainers in the country August 15th and 16th outside of Garrettsville in northern Ohio, where they will be teaching some of the most vital self-defense skills that every armed citizen should know. Lesson blocks will cover a myriad of topics suitable for shooters and students of all skill levels. For more information, visit Paul, the letter E, Palooza, PALOOZA.com. Remember to save the date, August 15th and 16th. So we are joined this evening by Dr. William April. William, you're still there.
I am. Boy, that conference sounds great.
Doesn't it? I know. So for those that don't know, you're actually one of the organizers of that event, correct?
I am, along with Dr. Sherman House, the medical director of Polypalooza.
Well, there you go. There's a lot of doctors involved in this event. That must mean it's awesome.
We have a couple coming. It'll be great.
Yeah. I've actually been to the last two, and have to say, it's an amazing venue and place to sort of sample all sorts of different training styles and philosophies and see kind of what fits into your, lifestyle and personal beliefs to where you can focus your energies one direction or another. So.
And I think, the charity aspect of it aside, which is tremendous, I mean, it's the kind of defense-oriented community stepping up to you know, fulfill Paul's real legacy to his children. Wonderful kids, by the way. But more than anything else, it's an unbelievable deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's $300, and you can sample some of the best training out there.
Yeah.
And you can pick and choose, you know, four topics a day is not difficult.
Right.
And decide, is that where I want my training dollars to go?
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic. Just a great event altogether.
Well, then, if you attend this year, you get to see Cecil Birch choke me out. So that's going to be fun too. So.
Oh, it was described to me as a choking booth.
Oh, is that what it is?
That you were going to be in it and people would line up and
huh.
Is it not that?
Don't talk to him like he's people. it might be a minion choking booth, but I mean, that sounds kind of like the FCC might have a problem with that. So we better fast forward slightly.
Maybe if I dress up as Bart Simpson.
Oh God.
I'm just going to leave that right where it landed.
Yeah. How about we do that? So moving forward, you were talking about schemas and how they relate to our perceptions of the information that we take in. Do you mind getting into that a little bit?
Sure. A schema is a cognitive shortcut. It's a way that the mind is trying to grapple with all the kind of data that we're faced with on a daily basis. I mean, we're literally awash in information. Some of it critical. But getting all the critical information out of the mass of information is really difficult. And so the brain and the mind are set up to try and facilitate that, to pick out the really critical safety, security, survival decisions from everything else and make those in a timely enough fashion that the organism, meaning us, you know, our survival rate goes up.
Right. So as far as in this circumstance where I view a video and even though I know what it is, when I watch the video, I see something different.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that or talk.
Well,
about
you know, your example was great. When you hear child assaulted, you're going to have a schema around that, a little mental snapshot of what that event was like. Like we can do a little test of it right now. And you and the minion are under the phone, and I say bank robbery.
Mm-hmm.
Let me have the first three words that come into your mind in response to the words. Bank robbery.
Ski mask, shotgun, and I don't know, security guard, I guess?
Okay. Maybe. And what are his?
I don't know. Yeah, actually probably the ski mask, panicked people, and I think of a handgun.
Mm-hmm. That's four words, Minion.
Sure.
Panic
and
I can hyphenate and, panic people.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
You know, mine were junkie, paper bag, note. Now, we're all right, unquote, in that those are possible outcomes of a bank robbery. But our visions of a bank robbery are completely different.
Right.
And the beauty of schema is that they help us manage data very, very quickly. The trap of schema is that a bad one can lead us to make decisions about resource allocation and training and expectations that aren't very true, that really don't reflect the real world at all, but instead reflect something that we think we can handle or moreover, something we'd prefer to handle.
Right.
You know, for most people, armed robbery does the same thing. It conjures up a certain mental snapshot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine as long as we keep in mind that it's a possible outcome, not the most likely or even one that should be expected. For many people, armed robbery means a crackhead with a raven by the dumpster at a convenience store.
Right.
Well, if you then make that your expected need, you know, when you make that your expected demand and train to that level, you'll be quite a bit behind the curve if you get something worse than that.
Well, and the you know, I went down and taught a class this last week, and I was talking with these people, and the environment they all work in is, you know, in a retail environment, and I was talking with them, what does a bad guy look like, you know, and I'm getting their answers, and I go, have any of you ever thought about what happens if a pregnant teenage junkie walks in and tries to murder you for whatever you've got in the register? You know, and just like the looks of like, huh, that would never happen. And then like, wait, what if that did? Were sort of surprising, you know?
Yeah. The contrast between what's expected and what occurs can be so shocking that people literally cannot process what is happening. And you see it on surveillance video all the time. You know, there'll be sort of an ambush type assault, and there'll be bystanders at arm's length away,
mm-hmm.
and simply not able to process that what's happening is happening because this just isn't what happens at the bus stop on a Tuesday morning.
Right.
you know, someone's being beaten to death with a, you know, with a pool cue right next to me. This just doesn't happen. And there's no parking spot for that reality in their head. And so it sort of circles the lot and then leaves.
Huh.
You know, eyewitness testimony is so unreliable because a lot of times people don't see what they what was there to be seen. They see what they expected to see. The recent assault of on two police officers by a hammer-wielding maniac in New York City was a great example. You had eyewitnesses saying, I saw the police shoot a man in handcuffs.
Yeah.
And that is literally and demonstrably not true. But it doesn't mean the person who said it is lying. It's you know, all, you know, all our reality is constructed. It's our filtration meeting the stimulus coming from the world.
Right.
So all reality is constructivist. And so we've got to come to grips with that.
Okay. So, and even for people that are prepared to deal with violent encounters or have maybe become aware through, you know, past experience or because they've read it somewhere on the internet or listened to a show on the radio or whatever that is, I just want to highlight this again. You already mentioned it, but even if you're aware that something could possibly happen, if your idea of who's perpetrating that or what that looks like is not what you're presented with, that's a huge problem.
Oh, an immense problem, because you won't respond to it as you should.
Okay.
You know, the notion that what's going to happen is exactly what you expect really relies on luck more than anything else. It would be sort of a lottery type event.
Yeah.
And so we want to think about instead what's likely, you know, and what's not just what we would prefer, but what's possible first and then what's likely. That's what should drive our decisions.
Okay. As far as sort of one of the other ones that I run into, and we'll switch gears a little bit here, and it falls into this, but when I hear people talking about, you know, their idea of what an attack looks like or a defensive gun use, because, you know, for better or worse, most of the people, when they imagine these things that I talk to, at least, they think of it as a defensive gun use, which could be an entirely different topic, but it doesn't sound that bad to me when they're talking about it. Like, my idea of what that looks like in reality versus their idea of what they think that looks like, there seems to be this massive gulf between the two. What's that about?
Well, the modal, you know, the most common kind of defensive gun use is what I guess we would define as the brandishing of a gun.
Right.
I mean, there are, you know, estimates, hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of those a year, where, you know, a typical example of that might be someone is traversing a parking lot late at night, and they get the feeling that the person leaning against their car, you know, intends them some harm, and they'll produce a pistol.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, the you know, hopefully putative attacker will just run off.
Right.
Well, that is a defensive gun use, but there's certainly no shooting involved. There's certainly no exchange of gunfire. It's not a gun battle or a gunfight.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, I would guess statistically the most common kind of defensive gun use, but I don't think that's on most people's radar as what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you tend to see two big spikes of things. People expecting something incredibly unlikely and not getting it, or people expecting something incredibly likely and not getting it. But on both ends, they're not likely to get that single one thing they're focused on.
Right. So as far as that goes, do we just try and make ourselves as well-rounded as possible and as multi, you know, disciplined as possible?
Sure. There's a bunch of different ways of looking at it. I mean, you know, Paul Sharp, the I guess we can call him a legendary trainer at this point of Sharp Defense, talks about being a bomb-proof badass.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty tough. I mean, that's an awfully high bar. Paul Gomez, the late trainer, used to talk about being good enough in enough areas.
Right. Right?
He used to talk about being, you know, adaptive thinkers and competent doers. And competence is a level I think we can ascribe for it. You know, we can shoot for in a whole bunch of domains. Now, among those domains, you might be particularly good at one or another, but you want to be at least competent in everything.
Right.
So that you could, you know, have enough knowledge to survive if that was the domain that was called upon to, you know, to save your life. And that within that umbrella, some of them you might be very good at, might have a very high level of function, but at least competence is a baseline level in just about everything.
Right. Well, you know, we got about 50 seconds left in this segment, but it seems like if you were to pick one thing to excel at, recognizing what situation you're actually finding yourself in might be an important one.
If I could wish one upon everybody, it would be looking at your environment.
Okay.
That would be the one where I think the least effort would have the greatest payoff.
Is, you know, and like I said, we got to go to break here in a second, but when you say that, you're not just talking about situational awareness, or you are? Or?
No. I'm talking about actively seeking out information as an active task.
Okay. I'm curious to see where this ends up going. So when we get back from break, we'll delve into that a little bit deeper with Dr. William April. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you're looking to protect yourself or a first-time gun buyer or competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. So, we are joined by Dr. William April. William, are you still there?
I am.
Amazing. So, before the break, you were talking about people actively seeking out information from their environment.
Mm-hmm.
Get in depth with that a little bit more.
Well, you've really dived off the deep end now.
That's okay.
If you think about it, if you remember Louis Pasteur, kind of a disease prevention pioneer, he coined the expression "chance favors only the prepared mind."
Okay.
Okay. You hear that thrown around a lot, even in a Steven Seagal movie. But chance favors the prepared mind. Now, passively observing the environment is just looking around, right? I wonder what there is. Now, on some level, we're relying on unconscious processes to identify threats, right? Active observation, on the other hand, is thinking, here is data, and I'm going to mine this data for things that either prove or disprove a hypothesis. Like, this is a dangerous neighborhood. That's a hypothesis.
Okay.
Well, as I scan the environment, actively looking for as much data as I can get, scanning the visual field, what do you hear, what do you see, what do you smell, all that good stuff. Well, there'll be data that'll either argue in favor or against that hypothesis. Well, as you think about it, what if we started every moment with a hypothesis? And that hypothesis is the world is not as it ought to be.
Okay.
Well, tell me how that doesn't play very well with Colonel Cooper's color code of awareness.
Okay.
If the world is not as it ought to be, perhaps I ought to be in this state of relaxed but unfocused awareness, that condition yellow.
Mm-hmm.
You can live in that all day long. You can live in it 24 hours a day. You're not focused for immediate threats, but you're looking for information that proves or disproves a hypothesis. The world is not as it ought to be. No matter what the circumstance is, getting out of your car in a parking lot, walking down a darkened road at night, alone in your office building, that sort of thing. Well, you might look around and say, well, here I am in this office building and it's awfully quiet. Well, that's a response to what's immediately present sort of at the end of your nose. But if you had the notion, an overarching hypothesis, the world is not as it ought to be, that means there might be somebody in here that means me harm, and this is a great environment for that person to operate without being detected.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so looking around for data that prove or disprove that hypothesis requires that thing that I call healthy disrespect.
So talk about that then, healthy disrespect.
That, that my sense is that, people call it pessimistic, but, sometimes sort of non-gun friends, non-defensive-minded friends will say, well, is that person really going to kill you, pointing to some sort of innocuous person? And I say, well, no, but they could.
Right.
That's healthy disrespect. Okay. I don't have active concerns about that person, but I recognize that they could do me harm if they sought to. Really, I don't know if your audience will be into this book, but there's a wonderful book from sometime in the late 50s by a British scientist named Beveridge called The Art of Scientific Investigation. It's a history of science to an extent, and it was a guide for scientists to start actively looking to discover things. It sounds strange, but discovery doesn't mean walking around and hoping you kick something valuable.
Right.
It means that you're looking on purpose and that you're drawing all of your intuition into play. Now, remember that the big gray top part of the brain, the neocortex, holds everything we've ever known, everything we've ever experienced. But intuition is the ability to access that information quickly and unconsciously. Well, if you have that kind of prepared mind, I have loads and loads of information in my mind, some of it even useful, and I apply it on purpose to the world, that's very different than just sitting there waiting for something to catch my eye as a threat.
So how do we...
Stumped you.
Yeah, well, no. I've got so many different directions I want to go with this. I'm trying very quickly to decide which one is most important.
Sure. It's a task, though, I have to say. You know, on the other side of the ledger for me is the business of mental health. Well, in that business, we say that change is not a hobby. Change
right.
takes work.
Right.
Well, this is a task. It takes work. You're not automatically going to suddenly wake up one morning and say, I will view the world differently from henceforward. It doesn't work that way. We have to build a new habit.
Right, and that's actually what I was going to ask you, is that how do we make ourselves do that, number one? And number two, is that something that some people accidentally stumble across and start making themselves do, or is that...
Well, experience does a lot of the work for us. You know, there's the old cliche that a conservative is nothing more than a liberal who's been mugged. You know, I don't think that's, you know, truly fair, but at the same time, it's the sense that you've had an experience and it changes how you see the world. You know, that you can't unring that bell. Somebody who's been the victim of random violence suddenly realizes random violence is possible.
Yeah.
You can't argue against it when you've felt it.
It certainly ruins your day, too.
You know, the old line about, you know, we don't exist. Well, kick a rock as hard as you can. You'll find out that you exist.
Right.
You know, I refute it thus. So, you know, but the notion is we need to build up this habit of mistrusting our ability to make peaceful patterns out of an unpeaceful world, right? You know, the brain is a pattern-making and pattern-recognizing computer, first and foremost. Well, if you look at the world every day and you don't die, I mean, you know, if you think how many tens of thousands of days people live and I haven't been killed yet, I must be doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sort of, you know, filters up from the pattern-making brain saying, don't worry, everything
right.
you're doing is fine, and the proof is that you haven't been killed yet.
Right.
Well, it's far from true. You know, for the vast majority of us, we're alive because nobody's really taken an interest in killing us yet.
Right.
Well, so to make a new habit of thinking of the world as a place where someone could try to do me harm, that it might very much benefit them, and they might take a great interest in doing it, we have to force ourselves at first until it's a habit. Habit is very powerful, both good and bad habits
mm-hmm.
are, you know, tremendously powerful. So we have to force ourselves through what we call those first iterations. And if you think about it, you get chances all day. What I like to say is the best place to start is never make a meaningless transition from space to space again. What I mean by that is if you walk out your front door, if you just looked out the front window before you opened the front door, you're safer than you were before you did that.
Right.
If you just looked around like a meerkat before you opened your car door.
Yep.
If you looked around before you got out of your car. If you just looked around, you're training your mind to acknowledge that reality. The world is not as it ought to be. Then you're actively gathering data to either confirm or refute that hypothesis. You're sort of living scientifically, but on a really granular level.
So,
and you're down there at nuts and bolts level saying, I have to refigure how I think about the world.
Okay. And I know that one of the arguments that I would hear from someone that maybe did not see the world this way or what have you would be, well, I don't want to live my life paranoid, but that's not what you're talking about.
Oh, no, not paranoia at all. It's got to be reasonable concerns and reasonable fears.
Okay.
You know, the person traipsing through the world, you know, waiting for the, you know, for the black helicopter to swoop down and the, you know, the New World Order SWAT team to descend on them and take them away to their mysterious site in the Antarctic, that's an unreasonable fear.
Okay.
But the notion that I'm in a mall parking lot and that might be the kind of place that would attract people looking to rob people coming out of a mall, that's not unreasonable at all.
The transitional areas always being where things like that happen.
You know, in transitions, people are naturally occupied.
Mm-hmm.
Hands, minds, feet, bodies were just otherwise occupied. And so making those conscious transitions from inside the house to outside the house, from outside the house to inside the car, from inside the car to outside the car, I mean, all of these transitions, if we just said, I'm never going to have a mindless transition again,
mm-hmm.
that means clear my thoughts, turn off the radio, hang up the phone, you know, empty my hands, prepare myself in case that bad thing does happen.
And I'll relate a funny story there. So I was talking with our friend Craig Douglas and was on the phone with him driving somewhere. I don't know where I was going. And I say to him, you know, we're in the middle of something, like, hey, I got to go. I'm parking. And he goes, yep. And knew exactly why didn't, you know. It was just like, oh, yeah, you've got to. Whereas a lot of people, it seems to me, would have continued that conversation in that area.
Mm-hmm. It's not an unnatural habit. One of the things I often say is for people with children, we get this general sense of what children should sound like.
Mm-hmm.
And when the noise level changes dramatically, either up or down, you get parents' attention. Have you ever seen a parent suddenly perk up and say, it's too quiet?
Yep.
Well, that's something, if you don't have children, that never crosses your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You're waiting for, I don't know, an explosion or something. It would get your attention, seemingly. But that habit, right?
Right.
I've come to know as a parent that, boy, when it gets quiet, something bad's going on.
Yeah.
That's the exact same habit applied to something that the average person can wrap their mind around.
Okay. So just being cognizant of environmental cues, almost?
No. But remember, it's not just observing what's there.
It's observing what's not there, what could be there.
Exactly, but it's forming an idea. Let's say this hypothesis, the world is not as it ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
Then looking for data that confirm that. Aha, I can tell it's not because there's a sketchy dude at the end of my row in the parking lot staring right at me.
Yeah.
That's an argument for the fact, the hypothesis, the world is not as it ought to be. Well, the parking lot is empty and well lit. Okay, for this moment, that hypothesis seems mistaken.
Okay.
That doesn't mean it's mistaken forever.
Right. So a constantly flowing sort of loop that you're on.
Mm-hmm. But the way to engage the mind consciously is to think of it as something that I'm, a thought that I have that I'm going to disprove
okay.
or prove at this juncture, right now.
All right. And the world is not as it be or not.
Yeah, the world is not as it ought to be.
Not as it ought to be.
That, to me, is the most simple definition of that condition yellow.
Okay.
We say relaxed awareness, but awareness of what? I would argue that we're aware that the world is not as it ought to be. People commit robberies. You have to lock your door. You have to look out for yourself. The world is not as it ought to be.
Okay. When someone has sort of started to think that direction,
mm-hmm.
and they've sort of... they're starting to progress past that. We got about 30 seconds left, so we'll have to really hop on this in the next segment. What's next?
I think it has to start with a really a critical self-assessment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Alcoholics Anonymous talks about a searching and fearless moral inventory. Well, we're not really talking about a moral inventory, but more an inventory of our knowledge, skills, and attributes. And okay. we really have to get a dispassionate look at those.
Okay. When we get back, we'll talk about that a little bit more with Dr. William April. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TacStrike Steel Target Systems, makers of the quarter-scale steel target and the arch-frame target stand, which are literally the best steel targets and target stands I've ever used. Fit their steel targets with more than 40,000 rounds of ammunition now at this point. Without a single problem. For more information, visit them at TacStrike.com. So, we are joined this evening by Dr. William April. Are you still there, William?
I am.
Perfect. So, this is actually a conversation that I don't think a lot of people have necessarily had with themselves, but as far as before the break, you were talking about someone taking in a dispassionate assessment of their own abilities and skills and, things of that nature. The mm-hmm. the immediate problem I see with that, and correct me if I'm wrong, is sort of the Dunning-Kruger effect, where if you don't know you're bad at something, can you really take a dispassionate look at it?
Well, one of the quickest ways to find out about your, knowledge, skills, and attributes is test them somehow. Test them objectively.
Mm-hmm.
That's why targets have scoring rings. That's why timers have stops and starts, so that we can measure someone's performance. We're going to do a task and see how long it takes.
Okay.
Do a task and see, how your performance was relative to someone else. What most people don't want to do is run the risk of embarrassment at that. And so the notion that I have to show up and dominate or not show up at all really lets a lot of us lie to ourselves about objective skill levels.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like it'd be better to be embarrassed in a non-consequence-based environment versus finding out in an actual lethal force encounter.
The cynic in me says, well, if I get killed, at least it's over. I guess that drives some of it. But, if I'm embarrassed, I could relive that 1,000 times.
Right.
It's a cynic's way of looking at it. But, yeah, you would think that people would much rather try skills out when the cost is less than everything.
Mm-hmm.
but that really doesn't seem to be the case. I mean, it, you know, that's what, you know, I hate to use so much jargon on you because, you know, my business is so full of jargon, but, you know, some of it is just very pointedly accurate. That's what we call denial in service of the ego.
Okay.
It's protecting myself against things that would threaten my sense of who I am. Now, it's not a conscious choice. I'm not sitting there and saying, I'm not going to believe that because believing that hurts my sense of who I am.
Right.
It's not a conscious choice. It's an unconscious defense.
Right.
You know, if I get humiliated at a game, well, the easiest first thought is, well, that game doesn't matter. Something about the rules of that game make it not really essential that my performance was bad.
Right.
You know, that's not just a particular kind of denial. That's, you know, the worst kind in my mind is denial in service of the ego. We'd like to think a nice, healthy ego can take a good challenge every now and again. Now, you've had Chris Fry from Modern Defensive Training Systems on before?
Not yet. I keep trying to, and his schedule has not allowed it.
That's a hole in your game, my friend.
No. That's not for lack of trying on my part. Trust me.
But no, just a wonderfully skilled trainer.
Right.
And he tells a story, and perhaps you can get into it with him. He took a private ECQC class with Craig Douglas way back when.
Yep.
And this is having been a lifetime martial artist and a longtime shooter and a very squared away guy, and got crushed.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells very movingly a tale of, you know, flying back home to New York City with his tail between his legs and saying to himself over and over again, my stuff doesn't work.
Right.
My stuff doesn't work. Now, what most people would do, people without Chris's level of integrity, by the end of that flight, they would have convinced themselves that their stuff does work, that there was some out, something that made their performance
acceptable.
Exactly, or some little thing, some strange exception, some weird technicality.
Right.
That means the data he got didn't really apply. By the time the plane landed, would have strapped a fractured ego back into place. But instead, Chris said, my stuff doesn't work. That means I need new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he uprooted his stuff that he really believed in, stuff that he'd worked on a lot, and transplanted new stuff. You know, that's one of the most, you know, remarkable stories I've ever heard. But it's not out of the realm of possibility for any of us.
Right. So as far as that goes, and I know that, you know, people are probably wired to do that or not wired to do that based off of all sorts of things that they are not going to get off of a, you know, 42-minute radio show. But how would somebody maybe prepare themselves for that?
Well, it's got to be something from the outside.
Okay.
But managing that in a way that is non-threatening is hard. And a lot of people are sort of bristling. I can hear them now thinking, well, if you have to coddle your ego, then your ego is already a problem. But we have to start where we are.
Yeah.
And we all start with strengths and limitations. And so if we, you know, come to grips with the fact that we might be improperly wedded to some really bad and silly ideas,
mm-hmm.
we have to let the world in, so to speak, let, you know, facts in, new realities in, and we get those through training.
Okay.
We get those new realities from training and from going to classes, listening to other people's take on things, and trying hard not to dismiss them because they conflict with what we already know, unquote, but start to weigh out what we're hearing versus what we're knowing. You know, in a healthy marketplace of ideas and in a healthy mind, that stuff will sort itself out, and the truth will sort of rise to the top in that mix.
Right. I can bring this back around two different directions. So going to a training event like Polypalooza might be a good place to start something like that.
Absolutely. One, it's a very supportive environment.
Mm-hmm.
If you show up and don't know anything, nobody's going to rub your nose in it.
Nope.
Everybody starts somewhere.
Right.
And I think at Polypalooza is especially a good place to bring, you know, very low levels of understanding of specific topics and get it straightened out, you know, have that foundation laid by real experts in the fields.
Right.
You know, so yeah, starting there is a great way to do it. You know, so it's a supportive environment. Plus, it allows you to see lots of different kinds of events, because you may have a particular strength and not even know it yet.
Right.
You may have a knack for striking for stand-up Western boxing game. Well, you can find out.
Right.
You may have a knack for a certain kind of shooting that you didn't know you had until someone else encourages you to do it.
Right.
We're going to do the things we're comfortable with. That's the way human egos work. We're going to do the things we're comfortable with over and over and over again and likely get good at them, or at least get better at them. Well, then we're reinforced by the fact that we get better at it, so we keep doing it again and again and again.
Yeah, that's not necessarily what we should be focusing on.
Not at all.
Right.
I'm telling you, if criminals ever start the pattern of standing 5 yards in front of static shooters, ooh, a lot of them are going to get mowed down.
Yep.
Because if you look at the average shooting range, people stand about 5 feet away from a target and put round after round after round into it.
Right.
So, but they're preparing for that one incredibly narrow and unlikely scenario.
Well, and real quick, too, because we're coming up on the end of the show, I have dates that I'm bringing you and Paul Sharp into town. August 1st and 2nd is at least what we've got scheduled. Still looking for a facility for that, but I will have you guys here. So, if
that's I think that's going to be a great class because it you know, Paul's shooting blocks are incredibly effective.
Yeah.
And he puts a lot of this sort of discussion that we're having right now into practical play.
Right. And I will post more details to that as they become available, including how to sign up and costs and all that sort of thing.
Oh, I can't wait. Hope we see a bunch of your folks there.
Yeah, yeah. I know the last one we did was just with you in town this last December was pretty amazing.
That's right, but now we have a little shooting to help the medicine go down.
Right, exactly. That's always the fun part. So other than that, is what would be your last bit of advice for people, I guess, before you leave this evening?
Well, don't be afraid of the world. As strange as it sounds, don't cost your life to save your ego.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way we can get the information that lets us turn that math in the right direction is to expose yourself to the larger world. Take more training. Take more, take more time. Take an interest in yourself.
Right. Hey, I appreciate you coming on tonight, William, very much. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Not at all. Thank you, John.
All right. Hey, be safe. I'll talk to you soon. So, next week, once again, not sure who we're going to have, but I'm sure it'll be amazing. Remember, check out our website, ballisticradio.com, for past shows. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.